the demigods,
Rishihi,
the sages,
Pitri,
departed forefathers, Bhutani,
and living entities in general,
Gatin,
one's immediate relatives,
Bandhu,
extended family,
Cha,
and
Bhaginaha,
to the shareholders,
Asam Vibhajya,
not distributing,
Cha,
and
Atmanam,
to oneself,
Yakshavittaha,
whose wealth is simply like that of a yaksha.
Patati,
he falls.
Adaha,
down.
Translation, one who fails to distribute his wealth to the proper shareholders, the demigods, sages, forefathers, and ordinary living entities, as well as his immediate relatives, in-laws, and own self, is maintaining his wealth simply like a yaksha and will fall down. So you repeat. One who fails to distribute his wealth.
One who fails to distribute his wealth.
To the proper shareholders.
To the proper shareholders.
The demigods.
The demigods.
Sages.
Sages.
Forefathers.
Forefathers.
And ordinary living entities.
And ordinary living entities.
As well as his immediate relatives.
As well as his immediate relatives.
In-laws and own self.
In-laws and own self.
Is maintaining his wealth.
Is maintaining his wealth.
Simply like a yaksha.
Simply like a yaksha.
And will fall down.
And will fall down.
So purport by the followers and servants of his divine grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ji Jai. One who does not share his wealth with the above mentioned authorized persons and does not even enjoy the wealth himself will certainly suffer unlimited problems in life. Okay. So Devar Shipit Tri Bhutani Yatin Pandum Sha Bhaganaha Asambi Bhajja Chatmanam Yakshavita Patatjadaha. So Omaganat Vidandashat Vidanjana Shilakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So there's several topics here. First one, I'm going to talk about yakshas. Generally, when you hear the word yaksha, you think it's something bad. And even in the context of this verse, it appears like a yaksha is something bad. It's not necessarily, or a yaksha is not necessarily bad. Remember that. And even rakshasa is not necessarily bad. I mean, like you have Vibhishan. But as far as yakshas, they're headed up by Kuvera, who's not a bad chap, as they say in the UK. Kuvera actually is in charge of the money for the demigods. It's just his service. He's like the accountant. So it's not bad that he's the yaksha or in charge of the yakshas. And there are many good yakshas. I'll tell one story of a nice yaksha from the Ramayana. His name was Stunavara. What happened? I'm sorry, this is the Mahabharata, not Ramayana. What happened is that there was this person, Shikhandi. You've all heard of Shikhandi before? Who was previously Amba, who wanted to kill grandfather Bhishma. So basically, Shikhandi took birth as a Drupada's daughter. It's a very interesting story in the Mahabharata. Okay, so she took birth as Drupada's daughter, but Drupada had been told by Lord Shiva that the daughter was his son. So he had so much faith in Lord Shiva that he treated his daughter like a son. Even though, you know, physically, psychologically, in every other which way, she was a girl. Okay. So, but he had faith in Lord Shiva. So he even went to the extent of arranging a marriage with his daughter, who he thought was his son, with, guess what, a girl. Now, in the modern day and age, this would be something, well, just normal. But in those days, especially among Kshatriyas, it was a really difficult choice to make. So anyway, so he arranged his daughter to marry another girl, but he thought his daughter was a son because he had faith in Lord Shiva. Everyone's following so far? It's pretty easy to follow. Anyway, so the girl married the girl, then on the wedding night, the girl, the other princess, discovered that she had married a girl. And she was really angry. She went back to her father, who was another king. And her father got really angry and challenged Drupada to a fight. So Shikhandi, actually, this is actually an interesting story from the full Mahabharata. I don't think the story is told in the abridged versions you have. So Shikhandi felt so upset that she thought that she was the cause of all these problems, so she went to the forest to commit suicide. So while she was in the forest committing, trying to commit suicide, there was this yaksha there who saw her crying. And he said, "What's wrong, little girl?" Or, you know, young lady. And she described the whole situation. He said, "Look, I can solve the problem. How can I solve the problem? I will give you my masculinity in exchange for your femininity." So they changed. So she became a he, and he became a she. So you had a she, or yakshini. The male is yaksha, female is yakshini. So anyway, so this yaksha, anyway, he was, I guess, a little embarrassed, as anyone would be if they changed their gender like that. Nowadays, of course, they said they wouldn't be embarrassed. It would just, like Prabhupada was dealing with someone who was changing his gender or her gender from one day to the other. You know, one day boy, one day, next day girl. And Prabhupada just said, pick one and stick to it. Prabhupada was very liberal in that way. You know, people think that Prabhupada would have yelled and screamed at them. No, he didn't do that. So Prabhupada spoke very strongly in the Bhagavatam and in class and everything like that. But when he's dealing with people, he was very, very accommodating in many, many different ways. So anyway, so this yaksha, or yakshini, was quite embarrassed. And one day Kuvera came to visit him, and Kuvera didn't see him because his yakshini, or yaksha as the case may be, was hiding out. And he said, "Where is my friend, Stunavara?" And they revealed to Kuvera that Stunavara had become Stunavarini, or whatever. And Kuvera got so angry and he cursed him. He said, "You shall remain a lady until Shikhandi dies." So in other words, he had to remain a lady, and Shikhandi remained a man until when Shikhandi was killed, and then Stunavara got back his masculinity. Nice story, isn't it? So that's a very, very compassionate, empathic yaksha. And actually, there's quite a few. They're not necessarily bad. However, some of them become bad because of association with wealth. This is really what's mentioned here. Because association with wealth, as Srila Prabhupada says, and the Acharyas say, the Damodara story, and the hoarding of wealth causes all bad qualities to come out. That's why in the Krishna conscious movement we have to be very, very careful of dealing with money, you know, accountability and all those other nice things that have to be, then we can't misspend, or we shouldn't misspend a farthing, as Srila Prabhupada said. So, as far as bad yakshas, we can think of a whole bunch of them. I mean, one of them was this person named Shankar Chuda. He was a yaksha. Did you know that? Very interesting personality. Shankar Chuda was an associate of Kuvera too, but he became so attached to wealth that he stole from the wealth of the demigods. And particularly he stole this jewel that was worth so much money, this effulgent jewel. The jewel was actually self-effulgent. It was like, I guess, the Hope Diamond or something like that. Like the British, of course, stole the crown. Their crown jewels were stolen from India. And there's some stories of how those jewels, because they stole them from the deities, had a curse built into them. And because of that, the British Empire became reduced to a third-class or tenth-class country. Because previously, Great Britain, the UK, was like even more prominent than America in the world. I mean, there were colonies all over the place. As they said, the sun never sets on the British Empire. But nowadays, the sun never rises on the British Empire because it's always cloudy. Like Prabhupada was in London, and a reporter asked Prabhupada, do you have a concept of hell in the Krishna consciousness movement? And he was just trying to stir up some controversy. And Prabhupada on the radio said, yes, London is hell. It's interesting. And the reporter didn't know what to do with the whole answer like that. London is hell. You know, you insulted London, you know, London Bridge, the Buckingham Palace. Everything's been insulted at once. Prabhupada was very intelligent in responding to different inquiries like that. And very humorous many times, too. So anyway, getting back to the story of Kuvera. So the Shankarchuda. Shankarchuda stole this jewel and put it on his forehead. And it was the jewel was in the shape actually of a conch shell. So it was called the Shankar jewel. Shankar money. That money means jewel. Now, that's where the English word money came from. Money. Money. Anyways. Just like Lord Chaitanya has a name that contains the word mani too. Does anyone know that name?
Gauramani.
Gauramani. Another name is Aryamani. The best of the Aryans. You know, the jewel of the Aryans. Gauramani, Aryamani. So he stole the jewel and he became so puffed up by that wealth of the jewel that he had. Guess what he did? He tried to steal the gopis from Krishna. The story is from the Krishna book. And he was basically trying to steal Srimati Radharani and the other gopis. Of course, he was never able to touch Srimati Radharani. Whenever a demon attempts to touch Krishna's consorts, whether Krishna's wives or like Sita Devi or the gopis, they actually touch reflections of the consorts. Like Ravana was only able to kidnap Maya Sita, not the actual Sita. So anyway, so he was apparently kidnapping or attempting to kidnap the gopis. And then what Krishna did, he killed him, as he normally does. And then he took this jewel that was taken from Kuvera, and he gave it to Balaram. And Balaram gave the jewel to Srimati Radharani. Such an interesting story. This story is in the Lalita Madhava Vaishnava Rupa Goswami. It elaborates on this story. And then Srimati Radharani held on to the jewel. And when Krishna left Vrindavan, and she left this world, at least in the Lalita Madhava, it's described like this, by jumping into the Jamuna River, she took the jewel with her as she ascended to the sun planet. And so then the sun god took possession of the jewel and adopted Srimati Radharani as his daughter. Later on, the sun god was very pleased with one of his devotees. Anyone know the name? Who was the sun god's devotee in Dwarka?
Satyajit.
Satyajit, right. And he was very pleased with Satyajit, therefore he gave Satyajit the Shamantaka jewel, which was actually the jewel from Kuvera that Shankarchuda had stolen. And then he gave Satyajit his daughter as to be considered Satyajit's daughter, and her name was?
Satyabhama.
Such an interesting story. Anyway, and there was this whole story about the Shamantaka jewel. Eventually, Satyabhama married Krishna when Satyajit apologized to Krishna. But I'm not going to go into all the details because there's interesting details in the Lalita Madhava. So there is an instance where a yaksha is a bad guy because of association with wealth. And, of course, the example that we always think of is the example of Manigriva and Nalakuvara, who are yakshas, too, because they were the sons of Kuvera. Mm. So Kuvera was a yaksha, so obviously, you know, it's part of the family. So they were yakshas also. So anyway, it's just pointing out here in this particular verse the dangers of association with wealth, because yakshas are generally associated with wealth. But it doesn't mean that yakshas are bad people necessarily. But they can be bad if they associate too much with wealth. So that's one point here. Another point that I find even more interesting in this verse is that in this verse we find that the Avanti Brahmana is advocating distributing our wealth to demigods, sages, forefathers, ordinary living entities, immediate relatives, in-laws, and own self. And own self I have no problem with, but anyway. But really, in one sense, that sort of contradicts certain aspects of our philosophy, which is interesting. For example, there's this nice verse from the Bhagavatam that I'm going to quote again. It's also in this chapter. Devarshi bhutapta rinam vitrinam na kinkuro nayam rini na rajan saratmana ya sharanam sharanyam gato mukundam parirritya kartam. And this verse has been quoted by the Acharyas and actually quoted by Prabhupada numerous times. It says, anyone who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, giving up all other kinds of obligations and is taken to the path of all in all seriousness, owes neither duties nor obligations to the demigods, sages, general living entities, family members, humankind, or forefathers. So this verse actually indicates, or it may indicate some sort of contradiction to the verse we're reading today. Does everyone understand the apparent contradiction? Because the verse today says, basically, one who fails to distribute his wealth to the proper shareholders, demigods, sages, forefathers. So, how do we deal with this apparent contradiction? I mean, in one sense, you have the tradition, which is almost like a Hindu tradition, of doing these different ceremonies, like the Govardhan, like worship of Lord Indra, like they did in Vrindavan, or they attempted to do before Krishna stopped them. And even nowadays, we have in Hinduism these ceremonies where they worship the forefathers. There's even 2 weeks that are just like exclusively for worship of the forefathers. Does anyone know the name of that? It's called Pitrupaksh. Mm-hmm. Heard of that before? Mm-hmm. Which is really interesting. And then after that, you got 2 weeks worship of the demigods. What's that called? You don't know. I thought you were from a nice Hindu family. I mean, her father was chastising her yesterday when we were in the car. He said, you know, you're so proud you think you're a devotee. I mean, I knew about this. We knew about this before you were born. Something like that, he was saying. It was really funny. I just couldn't keep myself from laughing until I almost hit the pigs on the road. Because I was driving and the pigs just... Fortunately, I was driving... And not Dr. Lakshmi, because we would have been in pig loka after a while. Taking birth as pigs, so I stopped in time. So anyway, so they have these ceremonies for
then
worship.
I'm not allowed to drive, all right? Now you know.
Well, now I know why you're not allowed to drive. Because we would have killed some pigs or been hurt ourselves had I not been driving. So anyway, getting back to the point, so you got these ritualistic ceremonies, and some of them, according to modern culture, are celebrated or done in such a way that it's ridiculous. I mean, for example, in Fiji, which I have a lot of experience with, the Pitrupaksh, that means the 2 weeks of worshiping the Pitras, you know, the forefathers, what they do is they actually offer to the forefathers, and they put a plate out or something like that, whatever the forefather liked to do when he was alive. And that includes liquor and cigarettes. In other words, they put a plate under a tree, whatever he liked to eat, you know, if it happened to be goats, because they don't do cows, they don't kill cows because they're from Hindu families. So goat meat, cigarettes, liquor. And I tell them, because they say, well, this is to give our forefathers pleasure. And I say, first of all, the forefathers are not eating it because eventually a dog comes along and eats it all. Of course, the dog doesn't smoke the cigarette, but he eats everything on the plate. And secondly, even if they were able to eat it or partake of it, that was what sent them to hell to begin with. smoking cigarettes and eating meat. So you're just increasing their sinful involvement, and you're increasing your sinful involvement. But they're so attached to these rituals. I mean, it's just amazing. And they perform the rituals basically out of fear. It's interesting, in Hinduism, most of the rituals, all the rituals other than devotional service, are performed out of fear or desire for something for themselves. You know, greed or fear, those are the two motivating factors. Because if we don't do it, then what's going to happen to us? Like the Indra Puja, you know, if we don't worship Indra, you know, he's sending the rain, he's sending this, sending that, you know, we've really got to pay him back for this. And if we don't do it, he's going to devastate us, which he almost did, if Krishna hadn't interceded there. So you do have some injunctions about worshiping or giving things to the forefathers. But in the Krishna conscious movement, we do things for the demigods, sages, forefathers, etc. in a Krishna conscious way. What does that mean? If you happen to be in a Hindu culture, then you can do pinda in a Krishna conscious way, like Advaitacharya did. Advaitacharya performed pinda. How did he perform pinda? He worshipped Krishna and he gave the prasadam remnants to who?
Haridas
Thakur, the best of the Vaishnavas, and actually a real Brahman, not a ritualistic Brahmana, not a family, you know, Gotra Brahmana, but a real Brahmana, the best of the Brahmanas. So we serve the Vaishnavas and worship Krishna. So you can actually give your wealth or give benedictions, let's say, not even using the word wealth, to the demigods, sages, forefathers, and ordinary living entities by worshiping Krishna and serving the Vaishnavas. But if you think that the proper way to distribute your wealth or the proper way to give benedictions to the demigods, to worship them separately, that's described by Krishna as avidipurvakam in Bhagavad Gita. Avidipurvakam means it's not the right path, purva. It's not the right path. And it won't help you, and it won't help them ultimately. So this is really the point, that we don't ignore these personalities, but we approach them in the proper way, either like the demigods as servants of Krishna, or the forefathers, we pray or we execute devotional service, just like my forefathers, or five forefathers, or whatever it is, five fathers. It's interesting, forefathers. So I perform devotional service. It's like when I joined the Krishna conscious movement, my mother said, you know, what are you going to do for me? I said, I'm serving Krishna for you. Because you're going to get liberated. And she said, I want a liberation. I want to remain in the material world. I said, it's too bad. You're getting liberated, lady. I didn't say that, obviously. But I said, so this is giving you all benedictions by my performing devotional service. So I don't have to serve you separately. I don't have to become a doctor like you wanted. I didn't say that to her. I mean, obviously, you know, if I spoke in that tone of voice to her, it would be disastrous as far as our relationship is concerned. But that was my intention. Because that's how I benedict or distribute my spiritual wealth. Because wealth can also be understood here, not only in terms of money. Of course, the Avanti Brahmana is referring to money because he was such a Scrooge. You know what a Scrooge is? Mm-hmm. You know, that's like the Christmas Carol story. He was such a Scrooge that's what he's referring to, because he basically was just attached to keeping money. But in a larger sense, it could be understood as any opulence that one has, and that can be connected with devotional service. So we distribute our devotional service to these different living entities, the people, ordinary living entities even, by preaching Krishna consciousness, by serving Krishna, and everyone gets pleased ultimately by that particular procedure. So I think we'll just, since it's a short purport and I've commented on everything I wanted to comment on, we can leave it open for questions at this point. Anybody have any questions? Yes, doctor.
You said that, you know, when we serve Krishna, everyone becomes pleased, but as you just now said, you know, your mother wasn't very pleased.
No, but the soul was pleased. When I talk about everyone, I'm not talking about their material minds. we're a conditioned state. The soul is pleased. I mean, just like sometimes devotees come up to me, you know, who are in, devotees who are in Maya, that sort of contradiction. Anyway, people who are members of the Krishna movement come up to me and they say, I'm not happy in Krishna consciousness. And I'm looking at them, they're extremely happy, but they're completely out of touch with what the soul is experiencing. You ever had that experience? They said, I was never happy in the movement. I said, huh? I've been watching you. You're just blissful. But Maya covers you up like that, so you think, you actually can be happy, but think you're not happy. This is actually quite interesting phenomena that I've observed in devotees, or aspiring devotees. And anyways, so yes, she didn't appreciate externally her false ego, coverings didn't appreciate, but internally her heart was jumping in joy. And later on, now she appreciates, of course, after 200 years in the Krishna consciousness movement, because she can brag about me to the devotees. You know, my son, the guru. Instead of my son, the doctor, my son, the guru. So, but even my father, he was very upset when I joined the movement. And then later on, before he passed away, he said he attributed all the success in business to my being a devotee. Yeah. Which is pretty good. He said, you know, I understand that, you know, because of your Krishna consciousness, you, that actually it's made my life very fortunate. And right now, he's probably in the Krishna consciousness movement, chanting his japa. I mean, he's probably, yeah, he's at least, how many years ago? Oh, he's probably married by now. It was about 20 years ago he passed away, over 20 years ago. So he's probably married with a family and going to join New Taliban soon. You know, so you are serving your forefathers, even though you're not serving their false ego. You don't have to serve, do what people ask you to do. You have to do what is good for them. Like if a child asks you, if he has diabetes and he asks you for candy, you don't give him candy. So it's not our business to satisfy people's false ego. It's our business to satisfy people's souls.
Thank you.
All right? Yeah.
I just wanted to ask Maharaj, because I saw something on the screen yesterday, and I was kind of too shy to point it out, but it looked like Govardhan Hill, from that way high view,
yeah,
it looked like it had a serpent going through it, and I just wondered if I saw it again, and, you know what I mean?
No, there's no serpent.
Yeah, I mean, it just had. I might have been looking at the wrong thing, you know. And I was curious if you might have that on.
Well, there are snakes. Yeah. I mean, for sure, if you've ever been in India, there are snakes. I almost got bitten by a cobra in Mayapur. Almost stepped on one because it was night. It wasn't, you know. I looked down and just like narrowly avoided stepping on a cobra. But Krishna says, if you worship Govardhan Hill, the snakes won't bite you. So, that's my protection. And there are actually villages of snake charmers around Govardhan. It's interesting, in India you have all these castes, so there's actually a snake caste. Did you know that out there? Is actually?
No, I didn't know about the snake caste, but I know there are snake charmers.
Yeah, well, there's a caste, it's a whole village of people who take care of snakes. So let's say if you find a cobra. I found a cobra in my house one day. We opened up, there was an electrical panel, you took it out. You know, they were fixing it, and then a cobra went like that in the walls. That's India. I mean, what do you expect? And so they're not bad, actually. You know, you picture these cobras go after people, you know. They're not. If you don't bother them, they won't bother you. Or if you don't interfere with their young or something like that, they won't bother you. So anyway, then you have to call this 1-800-SNAKE. You know, you call one of these villagers from the snake village, they come and they know, they can handle the snakes, they know what to do, it's they're very good.
Tantrics
also, is that?
Yeah, there's...
Tantrics?
No, these ones are not tantrics, they just, they're used to snakes, and they take care of the snakes. Yeah?
The Maharaj, the verse that you chanted in relation to this verse.
Yeah.
I memorized that verse like
Uh-huh.
Because when I was about 18, I was already, you know, I was in college, I was finishing up, and I really felt kind of mental, like, oh my God, I know that I want to be a devotee, and I know that I don't want to go out and get a job, so what am I going to do? My parents are going to expect this, you know? And so Dasarath, when he was traveling through, and I was just revealing my mind, I just feel all these doubts what to do, and because I know I don't want to go out there in the material world. I'm like a new devotee. I want to stay. And so he preached to me that verse, and I feel like it really took away my doubts, because it just answered my question as far as, what am I going to do? How am I going to please my parents? Because, you know, that verse is perfect for people like that just have to make that step from that traditional expectation of our parents and forefathers, what do they want from us, versus what do we know we have to do? And then making that step, I felt like that verse really got me through. And I've told that to other new devotees or people that are in that position, like, oh, I need to please my parents, so what am I going to do? And I felt like that verse, if you have faith in that verse, I feel that that verse helps you, you know, not be, you know, let's go. I mean, of course, you don't abandon your parents, but you let go of those, you know, they don't really know. Just like we don't really know that the soul's happy.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really know that they're going to be happy if we make that decision.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you for sharing. That's very good. But that helps you become part of the Krishna consciousness movement. So, but we are serving them by becoming Krishna conscious. Like you said, we're not actually neglecting them. So any other questions? Very good.
Where was the verse from again?
It's from the 11th canto, 5th chapter, text 41.
11:5:41. And then what is that ever verse where Yamuna Acharya says, don't go down to the Yamuna and see Krishna?
That's Rupa Goswami says, if you desire to enjoy society, friendship, and love, is that the one?
Yeah, but I thought it also stated things like, you know, the five fathers and the demigods.
Oh, yeah. There's a Madhvacharya verse also. That's a Madhvacharya verse. Yeah, we don't actually have a material obligation. However, in certain cultures, it's so strong, it's hard to make devotees because people think they have that obligation. For example, when devotees try to preach in Gujarat, they haven't been able to make any brahmacharis there. The reason being, the families just won't let hold of the kids. And therefore, all the pujaris in our Gujarati temples are from Bengal or other places in India. Which is interesting. And of course, the Gujarati people give a lot of money to the Krishna consciousness. I'll just tell one story. It's a heart-rendering story. There was one girl who wanted to join the Krishna consciousness movement. She was from a Gujarati family. And her parents, as soon as they heard she wanted to join the Krishna consciousness movement, they sent her to India to some dance school. Eventually, she came back to America and ran away from her parents and joined the Krishna consciousness movement. But there's not a happy ending to the story, so don't say jai. She ran away from, but her parents were sending her letters filled with guilt every day, she was destroying the family, doing this, doing that, and eventually she committed suicide. She walked into a river and drowned herself, because that's the traditional Indian method of committing suicide. In America, you just shoot yourself in the head. But in India, you go into a river, and she left her body. And the parents later realized it was their fault. She had left her body. So the parents imposed these guilt trips. And in Fiji, it's not quite so bad like that with the parents, but with the demigod worship, it's kind of bad because the parents tell the children that if you neglect the demigods, you're going to be punished. And then if something happens, like the children get a fever or something like that, they say that that's due to your neglecting the demigods. You know, everybody gets a fever. Everybody, you know, we get in car accidents and things happen in life. You know, life is like that. So you can't blame neglecting the demigods, but they do that. So the worship of the demigods is motivated by fear and greed. as I mentioned before. For the worship of Krishna, maybe it can be motivated in the beginning, as Krishna says, Chaturvidha Vijanti Mam, four types of people come to me, people looking for wealth, for example, or people who are in distress, or people who are inquisitive, or people who want knowledge. It can be motivated by something ulterior in the beginning, but ultimately, it comes to the point you're worshipping Krishna because you love Krishna. Whereas with the demigods, it's not like that. You're worshipping them for some ulterior purpose. It's not love. Therefore, it's called puja rather than bhakti. So any other questions or comments? Yeah.
So then what is our duty towards our parents and
Well, our duty is, first of all, to take care of our own Krishna consciousness. Because if you don't take care of your own Krishna consciousness, you're not going to survive spiritually. And they're not going to advance or survive spiritually. However, if you can care for them and it doesn't impede your Krishna consciousness, that should be done. Just like I've told my mother, and she's not very happy with this. She said, what are you going to do when I get old? She's 87 now. So she thinks old means 120. So I said, I'm going to take care of you, and I'm going to make sure you're Krishna conscious. She said, oh, my God. Don't do that. I said, well, you're going to be under my control now. Previously, I was under your control. Now you're going to be under my control. I joke with her like that. So, but I wouldn't lose my Krishna consciousness, lose my service, but if I can take care of her in a Krishna conscious way, making sure she gets prasadam, not meat, then, you know, and it doesn't impede my service, why not? Of course, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very strict with the Goswamis in Vrindavan. For example, when the Goswamis, when Raghunath Das Goswamis, let's say, parents, who Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu considered to be almost Vaishnavas, they were actually very favorable to the Krishna conscious movement. They were supporting Vaishnavas, but he considered them to be like worms in stool. You know why?
Because they were materialists.
Yes, but why worms in stool in particular? Because if you take a worm out of the stool, what does he do? Like a materialist is one thing, but a devotee who knows better, who jumps back into it, that's even worse, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, it's better to be a devotee, but at least from the standpoint of one's judgment. So they knew better, but they kept jumping into this stool ditch of material enjoyment, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu described. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sort of facilitated Raghunath Das Goswami leaving home, him and, of course, Lord Nityananda, whose blessing he got at the Panihati festival, facilitated him to escape from home. Whereas in the case of Raghunath Bhatta Goswami and Gopal Bhatta Goswami, what did Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu do? Until his parents passed away. So you have like two different instructions according to the status of the parents. But as far as the devotees in the movement, it is our duty. We should not act in a heartless way. It's our duty to take care of our parents in such a way that we don't deviate from Krishna consciousness. We don't lose our service. So if you can do both, fine. I mean, I can. If my mother agrees when she gets old, then I will certainly do that. But I'm not going to stay at home all day long, you know, taking care of her. But and she has money, so I don't have to pay for it. So if you can do it without stopping your service for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and also help them become Krishna conscious. I mean, you have the example of, you know, Bhakti Tirthamaraj, who helped his mother pass away from this world. And, you know, we don't give up our spiritual attachment for our parents. We want them to be Krishna conscious. We owe them that obligation. But not the obligation of pleasing their senses. That's a little bit different. So, yes?
My mother lives about 2 hours from here, and I go visit her,
mm-hmm.
and I give her prasadam and garlands, but it's
great.
Very difficult to preach to her or talk yeah. about any Krishna. Already me being vegetarian makes a friction. I go there, I cook, and I bring prasadam,
mm-hmm.
and that's the most I can do around. You're already 81 and 85.
That's good. I mean, you're doing your duty. I mean, if you started cooking meat for her, That's a different thing. But you're doing your duty for her. You're taking care of her. And then later on, if you have to take care of her full time, you just feed her prasadam. But you're doing what you can do. Like with my mother, same thing. My mother eats fish. She doesn't eat red meat or anything like that. So, you know, I don't preach to her. You can't preach. It's hard to preach to your mother or father. Because what is it? Upadeshu himurkanam prakopaya nishantaya. They'll become disturbed in their minds. So instead, you know, I just act very nicely to her. I keep in touch with my mother. And without losing my Krishna consciousness. And I visit her. My mother's husband passed away and I visited her. I was at the funeral of her husband. I consoled her and all that other nice stuff. But it didn't impede my Krishna consciousness. So it's a matter of judgment. What impedes your Krishna consciousness?
But do you have brothers and sisters who also take care of her? Or?
Yeah, not really. My mother doesn't need taken care of. First of all, she's only 87 years old. She's very strong. Yeah, so, no, my brother won't take care of her when she's not able to take care of herself. The reason is my brother married a woman who's envious of my mother. My brother needs permission from his wife to go visit his mother. This is life. Envy, you know, all those other nice things. So I would make some arrangement for her in a Krishna conscious way. That's our duty. I mean, otherwise, we're heartless if we're not taking care of our mother or father. I mean, how can we be so heartless like that? Okay. And in the beginning of the movement, we sort of had this misunderstanding that we should be heartless. You know, it was sort of the opposite side of the coin from serving our mother and father in a materialistic way. So I basically didn't contact my mother and father for some period of time, thinking that they're just my end. And then every time, I've told this story before here, I think. Every time I went to see my mother, I brought a brahmachari with me to protect me from my mother. I would never look at my mother's face because she was Maya Devi. And I would be talking to her and she'd say, look at my face. I'd look at her feet. And I would chant under my breath, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. You know, that was fanatic. That's too extreme. You know, there's a happy medium. So now I go visit my mother, you know, I'm not afraid of falling down, being in the same room with her. You know, I hope not. And then...
Oh my gosh.
And then, you know, I love my mother, but I love her in a Krishna conscious way. I want to see her become Krishna conscious, but she's not able to accept it at this point for me. So gradually. With my grandmother, I wasn't able to preach to her either. However, right before she died, I snuck some radicund water in her coffee. She turned around for a second, and I put a few drops of radicund water in her coffee, and then she died shortly thereafter. Not from the radicund water, of course. But she, you know, she benefited. All right, any other questions?
This is really nice. Now it reminds me what you're talking about, how Dvijbhuja and Mahalakshmi are getting the opportunity to assist her mother. Her mom is 94, and she's just there and hearing Hare Krishna and taking prasadam, and she's helped them through the years, so they're really feeling like they're getting to reciprocate with her now in a big way, to, at the end, just to, you know, she's hanging with the devotees.
Yeah, it's very nice. And in addition, we should help each other, too. That's another thing, because we are a devotional family. So when a devotee is in difficulty, we should all rush to help him. I remember in North Carolina, we had one girl who was dying of cancer. And basically, the father had to do everything, and nobody was going there to help. And when I heard about it, I started to go, and then the rest of the community started to visit her on a regular basis. And I was reading to her every day, brought my deities over, so she could see the deities, and eventually she left in the Association of Devotees hearing Krishna Katha. But it's our duty, not only family members, but every member of the Krishna Conscious Movement to serve. And especially if a devotee goes to a hospital, we should be going there regularly to visit the devotee, like we had Pundarik in the extended care facility, right? Mm-hmm. So every time I came here, we would go to visit Pundarik. Mm-hmm. And... you know, somehow or other he was given the blessing of going back to God, you know, going to Vrindavan and dying shortly thereafter. It's amazing, isn't it?
Do you know, Maharaj, that he was in Vrindavan, but he left on the appearance day of Radhakund, and Radhanath Maharaj was with him?
Wow, I didn't know that. I mean, Krishna really blessed him. So, anyway, it's our duty to take care of each other, too. Not just our material parents, blood relatives, but spiritual relatives. So, any other questions? Yes, tell me about that.
I told my mom the other day that I was going to the hospital to visit Raghunanda Sutta. And she was very surprised. And she said, is that just a standard and Krishna consciousness? Kind of like that. She didn't use the word standard, but it's like, she asked me that it's common. And I say, you know what? Actually, the Prabhu, who was her, he was very surprised that, and he was asking me, did you really come? Did you really drive from Kikiyun just to bring me to Shada? And I said, you know, Prabhu, when you got married with Marisha Devi, Prabhu Bhushani and I, you choose us as your, how do you say, padrinos.
Best man or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Parents, yeah.
I say, you know, in the way we were raised under the Catholic Church, that is the way we were raised, especially in Latin America. When people get sick, you visit them. It's like you said, you go to the hospital, you go to the house, you help. So she was telling me, even if that is not so common between the devotees, she was telling me, I am very proud of you, and I don't want you to lose that. I want you to continue being that sensitive to the needs of people. Even if nobody else does, you have to do it, because then you give the example to other devotees, you give the example to the kids. So she has been pretty much always very positive. At the beginning, because we were fanaticals too.
Yeah.
Of course, we get everything from a little lady from North America. So in the 80s, when I met the devotees and I became a devotee, we didn't want to deal with them. Absolutely not. They were demons, practically. So, but then we have kind of cultivated her, and she has become more friendly, more open. She's very pious. And one day I told my brother, I said, sorry, we are two against one. We are two daughters who are devotees, and it's you. So you know what? Mama said it's okay. We can cremate her body. So he said, okay, if she said, I said, you can have half of her ashes. And Prabhu and I, we can take half, and we will take to India. So she's excited because she told me one day, she said, you know, I really would like to go to India now that I am alive. But unfortunately, my body probably won't tolerate. But I know you guys are taking me when I am dead. So
she said, that's
nice.
And I'm truly so grateful for, you know, one after the other, every day, some devotee coming with prasadam. It was like, prasadam, thank you, Krishna. You know, it makes such a big difference.
Wonderful.
To have prasadam in a hospital setting where they give you all kinds of things. And of course, we tried. We insisted we are vegetarian, so. But just the seeing a devotee, it's like, you know, oasis in the desert kind of a thing.
That's wonderful.
You just see the devotee coming in through the door, and you're like, Krishna, thank you for the mercy. Because Krishna's mercy comes through his devotees. So it was like every day, you know, devotee coming, it was like, wow, thank you, Krishna. This is so wonderful. So I'm very, very grateful. That, yes, though it was a long trip, people took the trouble to express their love for Nanda Sutta for coming, and it's a whole new experience, and it was a very wonderful experience.
That's wonderful. There's a story even Prabhupada, when Tamal Krishnamars was in the hospital for a hernia operation in India, Prabhupada went there. First of all, he tried to stop the operation.
Yes, yeah.
But it was too late. So Prabhupada went there and stayed there until Tamal Krishnamars came back into external consciousness in the recovery room. And Prabhupada was there. Even, you know, someone of Prabhupada's stature did that. So that's the proof of our Krishna consciousness. You know, the loving exchanges between devotees. You know, if we become heartless, Krishna will never be pleased with us. Okay, I think we have to end now. The natives are getting restless and everyone's starting to leave. Okay, so we want to thank everybody for the nice visit and how nicely the deities are being taken care of and the cow is being taken care of. And who else is being taken care of? The devotees. What? Okay, and we'll see everybody soon. I'm always available by email if there's any points that people would like to bring up. And things are going nicely. You have a nice community board now. And it's a real good step in the future, and everybody's working together. I was very impressed at the meeting how devotees are working together very enthusiastically and cooperatively in this community management team. Okay, all glories to